this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howard. Ricardo on the board. S&P futures down 475. NASDAQ futures down 27. We have Dow futures up 4. Earnings just came out. We've got McDonald's. Says they're down a little bit because of the Mideast sales are down, which I didn't even know that much in the way of Mideast sales. Coke topped earning estimates, hikes revenue outlook because they're raising their prices. I guess we got that going for us. We have the Professor Carl.
You do.
So aren't you happy Coke?
have you actually looked at the prices in the grocery store for packaged sodas?
I think they're up quite a bit.
Oh, you do.
They're not?
They're not up quite a bit. You do know how this works in restaurants, right? Which is that the cup actually costs more than the syrup and the water that goes in there. Yeah, and the carbon dioxide. Because that's all it is. The syrup is in a big can, and it takes a couple of pressure connectors. Of course, the rest is water, and then CO2, which is typically in a large container out back that the guy comes and dumps more gas into when it gets low. But here's the other thing. When you look at your average grocery store, the amount of space, shelf space, that gets consumed by these drinks of all sorts is unbelievable. On a percentage basis. I mean, you think about it, just one category, okay? Because, I mean, that's what it is. This is what I get for working for Video Cart years and years and years ago. And they were doing the coupons on the grocery shopping cart handles, so, using computers. This was when actually doing laptop screen-style computers was sort of tough. Simply because of the power requirements, everything else. And, even then I marveled at this because it's like, well, I used to drink the stuff when I was a kid. I don't think I've had a sugared soda in at least 20 years.
I might be one better. I might be like 30.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a really long time and you really ought not drink any of that ever.
I don't drink the other stuff either. Drink iced tea or water. I haven't had a Coke, a Diet Coke, in decades.
Yeah, well, I don't. I mean, the
first iced tea is they owned by Coke or Pepsi or somebody.
Well, here's the so-called diet ones are even worse. When you get detoxified from this stuff, which if you drink it all the time takes a while. You'll realize if you take even one little sip of them, even whether the diet ones or whatever, is that they put salt in them.
Really?
Yeah, and the reason they do it, if you understand physiology a little bit, is that it means that you'll drink a second one because your thirst is not quenched intentionally.
Well, I buzz through a White Castle, which I have to do from time to time.
I know all about those. We called them sliders.
Oh, yeah, picked up a couple sliders, and they didn't have water or iced tea. This is a while ago. So I ordered a Diet Coke, and the lady must have thought I said Cherry Coke. And I took one sip. The amount of sugar in that thing has got to be, it's got to be like a sugar buzz for anybody who, I mean, it's incredible how much the sugar is in one of those things. It's even more than a regular Coke. Although here in Chicago, we're seeing a lot of is people are buying the Coke that's bottled in Mexico because it's regular sugar.
Right. Well, and probably doesn't have salt in it either.
But it's way more expensive.
Of course.
But there's the phenomenon, Carl. We wandered off on this topic, but stuff that happens in these industries kind of happens when you talk about people being, you know, cartels and those kinds of things. You know, when I was a Ute, my first job with minimum wage was $1.60 an hour at High Low Foods, right? And I was, you know, stock boy, and I didn't mind that so much, but the bagging was real tough because I was a big guy, and the bag thing was so low for the ladies that, but if I did that for 5 hours, my back was like he'd try to kill me. But anyway, but they would drop everything off in a big truck in the back. And we, the stock boys, one night we do this aisle, next night we do the next aisle, and so forth. And but now that happens on some of the stuff, but most of the things you're talking about, when you talk about the amount of, like, I go to Myers every Sunday morning and sometimes the Jewel or whatever. But if you go into the Myers, you see, and of course I have a couple of good friends that are in the liquor business, those people stock all those shelves for the store. And everybody has their little piece of space in the liquor aisle or in the pop aisle. So when you see that all that area that's given off the soft drinks and every conceivable kind of, you know, funky juice and whatever else is in there, those people stock that themselves at these big places. So it's virtually impossible if you and I came out with the Carl Chief Cola and they said, okay, we'll try it. You can have, you know, 3 feet of aisle space. There's no way we can dispatch and pay, you know, poor Ricardo to go out to 5 stores and put 10 cases in each one. I mean, you just can't afford it. But so that's why you end up selling out to the big guys, even if it's not the brand or the flavoring. You end up selling the distribution rights, which really is, you know, everything when you come right to it. So the Coke guy will now put your 10 cases in there. Same thing with bread. Same thing with booze. I mean, if you and I have the Carl Chief beer, it could be the best beer, but we're going to have to get there's no way we could, if they give us a spot to put, you know, 4 cases, that we're going to drop 4 cases at 25 different stores. Nobody can do it. The same thing with the bread aisle. So the distribution now has almost created monopoly power because the stores won't do it. I mean, if you go on the aisle where it's, you know, all the Asian or Italian stuff where there's a million little, you know, hot jardin, you'll see the people of Myers stacking all that stuff. But the big aisles like you're talking about, I think it's the people that show up and bring it in themselves. I know in the liquor business, Audrey's friend Kathy has been on the air with us. I mean, she stocks everything. I mean, they bring the stuff in, and if there's somebody's stuff in their spot, they throw it in a cart and throw it to the side if they got their spot. And you pay a bunch for the end of the aisle.
I mean, that was one of the things. So, just a little nostalgia here, 30 seconds of it. Video Cart was a spinoff from IRI, okay, which is a Chicago-based firm, or at least was. Don't know if it still is. And IRI and AC Nielsen's primary business was actually analyzing. I mean, everybody thinks they're TV ratings guys. They are, but most of their business, the vast majority of their revenue, came from analyzing the essentially what amounts to ticker tape, the sales analysis patterns from grocery stores. And IRI was a direct competitor. And the innovative thing that IRI did, John Malik ran the place, and very wealthy man, lives in Chicago. I think he's still alive. I don't know. But I went to work for him, and his innovation was that he figured out how to finance the automated checkout machines, the laser scanners, which at the time that they were introduced were hideously expensive.
And in return for putting those in your grocery store, you know, so you did that. He got the data. That was the deal. Okay. So IRI got the data, and you got that. Well, that's how they broke the checkers unions. That was how the grocery chains all broke the checkers unions. Because prior to that, you had to actually have some skill to be able to ring people up fast enough and do it accurately enough with mechanics.
Not only that, you needed an incredibly strong forum.
Yeah, it was a skilled job, okay? And the people that did it were good. I remember it when I was a kid. Well, of course, you know, the
skills. You didn't want to get clocked by one of those ladies. You would have been clocked.
Yeah, you would have been.
I'm talking about the machines weren't even electric back then. They were manual.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, it's, you know, that's how they broke it. And it was a unionized job, and it paid very well. And that was how they broke the checkers unions. And the, but basically the deal was, you know, the grocery stores could not afford this equipment. It was hideously expensive. Computers were expensive at the time. Of course, now they're dirt cheap. But they weren't then. And so Data Checker, ICL Data Checker, and then IBM comes out with a 4680, which was, you know, their competitor to it. But those were the two companies. And NCR had equipment too. So there were basically three different firms that you know, that made the back end stuff. Okay, they talked all this stuff at the front end. And you know, it was all theirs. But it was there was I. $50,000 a lane, okay, to put these things
wow.
in. Oh, yeah. I mean, that was... grocery stores... I mean, you know, they run out of 1% margin. They don't have that kind of money. And so that was the deal, was IRI would come in. They paid for the hardware. They put it in. And but in exchange, they got the data. And so if you wonder how valuable to different people, including the food manufacturers, that information is... the fact that IRI could come in there and put that hardware in there and pay for it, and in exchange, you know, the grocery store didn't pay anything for the hardware. What they got was the data. There's your answer. Okay, there was a lot of money in this, and I'm sure there still is. Nowadays, of course, you know, everybody analyzes everything, right? Doesn't matter what the store is, because everybody's got a computerized scanner at their, you know, at their checkout. But that was how it started, and it's and. The fascinating thing to me is that you have these correlations with American health that are, you know, they're all going the wrong way, right? They have been for, you know, 30 or 40 years. And they're not small correlations, okay? Obesity, type 2 diabetes, insulin resistance in general. Diabetes mean, the etymology of the word is the mother of all diseases. I mean,
yeah.
How much more clear does it get than that, right? And so that's where that is. But then you have insane increases in autism rates and you know, among kids and things like this. And the elephant in the room is that can't be genetic. Because genetic mutation, for good or for bad, takes dozens, if not hundreds, of generations in order to show up and become statistically significant. And yet here we have, you know, autism rates of 1 in 1,000 kids. Now all of a sudden it's 1 in 30 or 1 in 25.
What do you suppose? I mean, it's kind of interesting and disgusting to me a little bit to, you know, and I think they're probably right, Carl, where people will say it's not. You know, it's not the injections or the inoculations and stuff you give kids, but until you find out what it is, how do you keep telling people you know what it isn't? I mean,
Well, I have several theories. I don't think it's one thing. I think it's several things all at once. Okay, because the scale of the changes is so ridiculous that short of intentional poisoning, it would be hard to point at one, you know, at one thing, right? I mean, literally short of intentional poisoning. So I don't buy that. But I do believe that some of it is due to it's a combinatorial insult problem, basically. You insult the body enough times, you break it. And so that's, you know, but a lot of it is the, I'm absolutely convinced. A lot of it is the seed oils. They're used because they're cheaper. They're not used because they're better. They cost less. And they're shelf stable. They can be made shelf stable, which is, of course, the 900-pound gorilla. Refrigerator cases are expensive. And so that's a huge part of it. I'm convinced that the high fructose corn syrup is a big part of it, and the sugared syrup.
You mean in the parents?
Well, and of course, well, but the thing is, nobody makes things that people don't want to buy, right? I mean, that's the bottom line, is that if stuff doesn't get bought, it doesn't stay in the shelf for very long. And so you've got that. I do believe that an awful lot of it. I don't care if you want to look at people say, well, the vaccines are not the cause of it all, the injections we give kids. I don't buy that. I just don't buy that. The correlation is too strong. And there are small groups, the Amish, for example, that eschew this stuff for the most part, that have dramatically lower rates. Now, the problem, the confounder, is they also have dramatically lower rates of eating all that crap, too.
Okay? Well, one of the guys who used to do the show this a lot until he moved, his son has been autistic since day one, and he was firmly in the camp that I knew something was wrong with him before he had his first injection.
Oh, yeah.
But then another gentleman he was on last week, Greg, when his kids were younger, they're ones in college now, he didn't mind the vaccinations, but he told the doctor, you're not giving them all at once.
Right. that's what I'm saying, Chief, is that I don't think it's one thing, okay? What I do think it is a combination of insults. And there was a paper I read, this one's been buried, nobody wants to go anywhere near this, about 20 years ago. I had a nephew that, when he was younger, had leukemia. And it was all kinds of weird stuff going on in my family and, how he was being taken care of by my sister at the time and things like this. And I started digging around and, okay, what's the real etymology? Because I'd never been touched by it before in my family, all right? I mean, I knew people whose kids had it. Some had survived it. Some had been killed by it. And so I did it all. This was back before the internet was a huge thing. So if you wanted to do this kind of research, you had to go to a library that had had medical papers. And I did, and I sifted through a bunch of stuff. And there was a fascinating paper. It came out of a bunch of Japanese guys. I don't remember the title on it anymore. That they had a hypothesis that they didn't have enough proof for. They had some pretty good evidence that leukemia was actually a multiphasic disease. It had two causes, not one, and you had to have both in order to get nailed by it. One part of it was genetic, so you had to be genetically disposed to it, and then you had to suffer a specific viral infection that set it off. And if either one of those two things didn't happen, you didn't get it. But if they both did, then you got screwed. And it was fascinating because, of course, we don't think of, we don't think of cancer and, that kind of thing that way, all right? But then you look at some of the others that now we know, HPV, for example, most people clear it. It's an infection. You get it. You clear it. There's no residual effects at all, okay? And now you have immunity because you got it, all right? But in a small percentage of women, it becomes integrated into your DNA, and in men it can too. And it then, especially if you're gay, and it shows up in your throat as cancer there. And if it gets integrated into your DNA, there is a small chance that it will cause cancer, but it's not guaranteed either way. So it's a multiphasic thing. You have to get the infection, and you have to fail to clear it, and it gets integrated. And then if that happens, then you're at risk of cancer. And the thing is, though, is that the actual underlying risk between those two, assuming you get infected, the risk of both failing to clear it and then getting cancer is like 1 in 1,000. But if you infect, everybody in the country, that's a hell of a lot of cancers, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah.
So, I mean, that's the thing, is that there's, we don't understand. My point, I guess, is that we don't understand this stuff very well at all.
No, I mean, we, I, I, uh, there's another kind of a corollary thing, and then I want to talk to you about some of the stuff going on with the Tesla in China. But yeah, well, I know, but I read this thing. It's kind of sort of a parallel spat. There's a lot of, I use the term infections, diseases, what you want to call them. Gum disease is one of them. Arthritis could be one of them. Where they're like these low-level diseases that the body sees them, starts to fight them, and then says, ah, what the hell, and kind of gives up.
It turns into a tolerance reaction.
It turns into a tolerance sort of thing. And how somebody was trying to put together some, I won't say, well, I guess medicines, but they're essentially where tell the body, quit, stop trying to fight these things. Go ahead, because they lead to other stuff. Everybody has infections, and the body tries to fight them, and then all of a sudden, some they keep fighting, and some they don't. I mean, maybe even cancer is one of the. There was a theory for a while that cancer was the same way, that the body would fight it for a while, and then all of a sudden it wouldn't. And
well, here's the thing. This is something most people don't know at all. Every single living animal on the planet, all the time, has cancer.
Sure. Oh yeah.
You all have cancerous cells running around your body. Your immune system, part of the reason you have, in fact, the biggest reason you have an immune system, is finding and destroying those things before they turn into tumors. Okay? And when your body is incapable of doing that for whatever reason, that's when you clinically get cancer. And so, and that's one of the things that makes it such a bedeviling thing, is that figuring out that all that interplay, we don't have it. We don't have 5% of the necessary knowledge to do it. And so, but this much I'm sure of, perturbing your bodily systems with things that they just weren't there, right? You are playing with fire, because it takes millions of years for adaptation to take place. It doesn't happen in a space of 10 or 15 or 20 years. And never. And as a result, you push that envelope too far, you go over the edge where tolerance is no longer possible, and the organism gets very badly ill or dies. So, okay.
Let me lead in a little bit. I've been kind of beating this up lately, and partially is because obviously I'm a brokerage firm and I manage money, and I've seen most of my stuff about markets is pretty right, but it's also could be like insanely early. So I don't ever expect anybody to actually do a trade based on me, because I don't do trades based on me. I would do trades if I think I have edge, and if I'm doing something for somebody to protect them or whatever, because that's what the person needs. I don't come out one day and say, today we should buy puts, today we should buy calls, today we should buy stock, sell stock. I mean, when you've been trading for long enough, you know that that's a, you don't have that kind of talent. If I could read some Fed reports earlier, maybe I'd have the talent for a day or two, but that's about it.
It's called insider trading.
It's called insider trading, but I've never gotten that phone call, nor would I act on it. Unfortunately, I'm an honest guy. But the mentality is so the same for me now as it was in 1981, in the sense that even though there's been, in my opinion, there's somewhat of a tone change here, interest rates going the other way for the first time in a long time. Seemingly they're going to last this time. There's been a couple times where everybody ticked up, but it was just kind of temporary in the last 15 years. But this time I don't see anybody, unless you're really out there, to think we're going back to 1.5% in a 10-year. Maybe we will, but boy.
It's not about people thinking it, Chief. It's people that are trapped and need it to happen.
Right. Well, I talk to people who have had very successful, accounts and everything, and they don't even really want to be in a situation where they even think it could happen, to where they even set themselves up in such a way where if they had to call somebody and say, boy, this doesn't look so good, how can I protect myself? They don't even want to entertain the possibility there could be a change, and I don't really get that. But then again, they weren't around in 1981 when it was obvious. I still can't believe, Carl, that from between 1981 and 1982, and I don't know why I went back and dug this up because it's aggravating me. That in the first year the interest rates started to come down, people were so into the mindset that you never invested in stocks, that the CD rate went from 16 to 12 between early 81 and August of 82. In that same time period, the market was actually down 20% before it spun. And this time, I mean, if you listen to TV all day long or any kind of stuff, or read the stuff, you would absolutely be convinced that since the Fed has started raising rates about 2 years ago or whatever, 2.5, when they started raising rates, that the market has gotten hammered and we're just waiting for it to go the other way where we can bounce back and get all that money back. Doesn't anybody realize the market's actually up since they were doing it? It's exactly the flip side of 1980.
Oh, absolutely. And but the thing is this, is that what you have, you know, I look at the stuff that's going on with real estate, things like this. There are some areas, and I know this area really well because I live here, obviously, and I pay a lot of attention to it. But I also just kind of on a survey basis look around different metro areas in the United States. And there are some areas where even with rates at, you know, 7.5, you've got the stuff that's on the market and is selling, not just sitting out there, you know, wishes and dreams, but it's actually selling.
Yeah, higher.
At significantly higher prices. It's just stunning to me.
And Except for Florida because of the insurance fiasco.
Well, yeah, but. You know, I mean, look at, like, you know, the metropolitan Detroit, around the Detroit area. Okay, Detroit is a dive, but, you know, some of the areas around there are not bad.
Right. Well, Audrey, we got a dash, Carl, but we're going to talk more about it on Friday. But Audrey was on yesterday talking about the prices have held up. They're higher in Orland than when the whole thing started.
This is going to blow up in everybody's face because everybody is expecting that they're going to, yeah, we'll pay that for the next, you know, 6 months or 12 months, and then we're going to refi down to, you know, 3.5. No, you're not.
All right, but we'll talk about the Tesla thing. And so the stock, $90 bazillion worth more because they're going to have cabs running.
Oh, my God. That's unreal. That is a total scam. Sorry.
All right, we'll talk about it on Friday. But S&P futures down 375, NASDAQ futures down 25. Be right back, Mr. Joel and Cannon.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ricardo on the board. S&P futures down 4, NASDAQ futures down 24. A little bit of the downside here this morning. We're in Europe. We got the DAX down 59.3%. FTSE up 49.6%. CAC around down 2. Call that flat. So we got a mixed bag over there. Bonds are up 2 basis points, 4.63. The Bund up 3 basis points, 2.56. Then this week we got the Fed tomorrow. We've got labor numbers on Friday, so it's a big week. Japan up 4 basis points, 0.88. I'm sorry, down 4 basis points, 0.88. Was over 0.9, which is pretty high for those guys. Oil up 42 cents, 83.05. The Brent up 38 cents, 88.78. Natural gas up 4 cents. Back over $2, 207. So far it's been a buy every time, down around 170. Who knows if it'll go back down there again. Our Bob unchanged, 274. Gold down 32 bucks. Dollar's firming ahead of this Fed thing. Dollar has been down, but it's coming back up a little bit. 23.24 in the gold. Silver down 73 cents. 26.92 under 27. We've got crypto down another 1,500. Bitcoin 61,228. Long way from 73,000 where it gap, but still pretty darn high. Over in Asia, we have the Nikkei up 470. It's a few days in a row for those guys. 1.2. Hang Seng up 16. And it's pretty flat, but 17,763. Shanghai down 8. Let's call that one flat too. With China, factory activity slowed a little bit. Nothing major there. Carter, what do you got for quick traffic weather sports? Cubs win late.
Top of the morning, Chief. It's a beautiful morning out here in Chicago. It's currently 6:34 a.m. right now. You got 52 degrees right now with a high of 68. Mostly sunny and pleasant. Tonight will be partly cloudy and mild with a low of 60 degrees. Looking ahead at a pleasant Saturday here in Chicago, though. Perfect for Cinco de Mayo, which is a holiday that Americans enjoy more than Mexicans themselves. In Phoenix right here, we got 67 degrees right now with a high of 95. Very warm with plenty of sun. Tonight will be clear with a low of 67. On the traffic out here in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe is going to be 16 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook is going to be 40 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 34 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 16 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is going to be 37 minutes. On to sports, I only got the MLB today. It's been kind of, these past couple of days were kind of quiet, I guess, when it comes to Chicago and Phoenix sports. But in the MLB, we see the White Sox losing to the Twins 3-2 here in Chicago. The Cubs beat the Mets 3-1 in New York, and the Diamondbacks lost to the Dodgers 8-4 in Arizona. All these three matches are also repeating today, Chief. The Cubs versus the Mets are going to be at 6:10 p.m. The Twins versus the White Sox at 6:40 p.m. and the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers at 8:40 p.m. So if you want to check it out, better make sure to be aware of that. And that's all I got for you, Chief.
Ricardo, why is it though I really love it when the Mets lose?
I don't know, man.
Just saying. Do we have Joel?
We got Carl.
Got Carl? Carl, why do I like it when the Mets lose?
I don't know. Well, you got Joel too, but he's got his little mute thing on.
Oh, he's.
Hey,
oh.
Hey.
Oh, there he is.
Hey, Carl. Hey, how you doing? The old mute trick. My wife wishes she had one of those buttons on me. How's everyone doing this morning?
We're doing fine, bud. Much nicer this morning. Yesterday was. The expressways were flooded on the way in. It was an absolute disaster. Today, it's beautiful. You never know. Chicago, wait a day, and you're good to go.
Okay. All right. What do we watch? We got to get some Kentucky Derby talk in.
Yeah.
If you want to do that now, we could do it now. If you want to do it at the end, we could do it at the
end. Let's do it right now, because I know Carl's busting with his. He only goes at a $100 window, this Carl guy. By the way, they even have windows anymore at the track? Or do you just go up to some kiosk?
Windows. I heard what you said.
Yeah.
Chief. Boy, oh boy. The last local track closed down here. A couple months ago, I dragged the wife there. We went to a Michigan football game, a basketball game, and then I said, you know what? We got to go to Northville Downs. They did have windows. They do have a lot of kiosks too. But they're trying. Sad day. I mean, what's open in us? Is anything open in Chicago?
I think all the harness tracks are closed. I think Hawthorne Park's the only one that's open.
Okay.
They probably have a harness spot too. I mean, Sportsman's is closed. Arlington's closed. Balmoral's closed. Maywood's closed.
I've been there, but my dad's run ponies at all those places over the years. Got a super good story too. Did I tell the one about? This is back in the mid-70s. My dad had a horse that loved to run in the mud.
Oh, really?
He was a mudder. Varsity King. Did I never tell this
no.
story? And this is probably, my dad was probably like in his early 40s and whatnot. But he found out that there was just a massive rainstorm in Chicago at Sportsman's Park. And our horse was going off at very good odds. So he got in the car with his partner. He drove to Chicago. He bet. It might even have been at Washington Park. And he went to the race. They went. They bet. The horse went off at ridiculous odds. The horse won. And actually, I got a picture in my archives of my dad standing in the mud. I believe it was Sportsman's Park. Sportsman's Park. The horse is all muddy. The jockey's all muddy. My dad's clothes are all muddy. And he has the biggest smile on his face.
I can imagine. You mentioned you mentioned Washington Park. Carl, how's this for an omen? My grandmother used to live in Chicago Heights. Why they moved out there, I have no idea. We'd go out there for dinner on Sunday. So Washington Park actually had a Sunday races, right? Washington Park was on the south side. It actually was a bigger draw, since a lot of the money in Chicago used to be on the south side. It was a bigger draw than Arlington because it was closer. So we go, we get in after the fifth race, you could get in for free, right? So I think I won, out of the four races, I won like three of them. I'm in college, I'm betting like $5, and I walk away with like $100. I'm like, first time that ever happened to me in my life. And that night is the night the place got torched. I don't think I've won.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think I've won since.
Okay. Well, at least you walked away a winner. Okay. All
right, what do we get this week going on here? We got Fed.
Looks like a two-horse race. We didn't even get to the Kentucky Derby. We got a two-horse race between Sierra Leone. Probably has the best pedigree coming out of, like, I believe, the three-hole. It's going to be the favorite. But, man, this fierceness, number 17, man, oh, man, take a look at your Florida Derby. That horse just, I don't want to say the word, but he just blanked all over the field in that. Has the fastest speed rating. I mean, I don't like to bet, you know, 3-1, 4-1, even 5-2. But man, he looks like he could be. And I said this to my wife, and she said I was a little bit crazy. I said this horse could be the next Secretariat. So that's a big thing to say. If you want a long shot, the winner of the Santa Anita Derby Stronghold getting absolutely no love at all. On the morning line, he's closer to 21. So if you want to get in there from an exacta standpoint, Sierra Leone, Stronghold is your long shot. And then, man, oh, man, fierceness. You got to take a look at that race.
17 horses?
More than 17, wow. Chief. There's 20 horses. Wow. Fed, isn't it all about the Fed tomorrow, and they're going to do absolutely nothing?
But they're gonna talk for 2 hours.
Yeah, I mean, do they ever say anything different? I mean,
Paul's been known to flip one way or the other and send the market when he's doing his news conference.
Yeah, so what were you leading on that? I mean, we've had a nice rebound off the low. You know, this is just a teaser for me because, you know, based that exaggerated move a week ago Friday, we've got about half of the move. And if the bulls can really get the market by the horns, there's limited resistance in this market. It just feels like, you know, you got some people peeling out here, maybe the sell in May and go away mentality, the end of the month commencing today. So, or, you know, today's the last day of the month. So a lot of different factors, you know, going on. But the Feds can stay pat, data dependent. Some people are saying they might, you know, talk about the next rate hike, next move being a rate hike. That would send the market into a tizzy, but I don't anticipate that happening.
Yeah, no, I don't really. They're not going to say it, even if it may be going to happen. But I think these inflation rates are coming back up here, and it's pretty obvious to everybody.
Yep.
Well, Joel, well, thank you very much, bud. You're not going down there, are you?
No, man, no way.
Well, you have. You've been there, right?
No, I haven't. I've thought about it over the years, and then, you know, Big Crown. Let's say I could go, like, you know, like a VIP, like with you or something, and sit up in the box. But no, I'll be sitting at home, having a sip of the mint julep, and hoping I cash a ticket.
Are you wondering, like I am, why Carl is not inviting us to his skybox?
Yeah, I don't know Carl that well, but if he had a skybox, I could make arrangements to get down.
You could make arrangements to shake hands and act like you know him, you know?
Yep. Okay, go Blue.
All right. SP Futures down 5, Nancy Futures down 28. Do we have Kenny, or we want to take a quick break?
No, I'm here.
You're here? Well, let's just go right to Kenny. Now, here's a guy who's probably a skybox Kentucky Derby kind of dude.
No, I'm not.
But you would go. I would.
I would go. I've never been. I would go.
I want to see the hats. On top of the very pretty ladies. I would, you know, I'll just look at the hats, though.
Yeah. What's going on?
Nothing. Crazy stuff. The Tesla move on China, and we had a long discussion yesterday about are we fighting China? Are we liking China? Are we investing in China? What do we do? I've never seen a more messed up relationship between governments, businesses, and people hating the place and loving the place in my lifetime. I suppose it would have been similar if, you know, Germany would have hung off a few years before they started invading into people wanting to trade with the guys and not trading with the guys, and some firms loving them and some not. I mean, it's, I guess it's happened before. It just doesn't seem like it's been right in front of us like this time.
Well, it's so funny because I put this in my note this morning that he made the surprise visit. He get into bed once again with China. They have this agreement in principle. They have to use Baidu to, you know, do all the mapping and navigation. But they also have to, share all the data and all the privacy for anyone that's going to drive up one of these cars. Now, my guess is that means the data and privacy for anyone anywhere that's going to drive one of these cars.
Yeah, I'm thinking
so,
you're right.
When you get in bed with the devil, you get in bed with the devil. I don't drive a Tesla. I don't intend on driving a Tesla. Not because, you know, it's not a good car, all that. I just don't. I'm not going to drive an EV. I have no place to charge it. I have to go to the local, you know, Walmart parking lot, you know, half a mile away and sit there for 3 hours to charge my car. Makes no sense. Zero sense. So I'm not going to play in that game.
Well, what from time to time, and you never really know what's in somebody's mind. But when somebody does something like this, and Elon Musk, you know, obviously a very bright guy in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I keep hearkening back to Harold Janin in the Sovereign State of ITT, how governments were just pawns in the way, and how they were the real movers and shakers of the world. And you know, I don't see this Musk as having any kind of loyalty any place, do you?
No. He's got loyalty to one place, to him and his companies, and I get that, and that's all well and good. Which doesn't mean though that I have to jump in bed with him. I've got no interest.
Well, also doesn't mean you couldn't put him in jail if you needed to. You know, one would hope.
Well, I suppose, right? If you have to put him in jail, but I don't necessarily think he did anything wrong illegally. I just think that once you sell out your soul, you sell out your soul. And so, you know, we're all arguing and we're having debates about what China knows, what they don't know, where they have, you know, where they're watching us and their and any of the products that are built and manufactured in China. They come to the country, they spy on people, they listen to people. I'm not interested. So and now that he's made this move, you know, it's in principle agreement where they're going to share all the data, all that stuff on anyone who's driving one of these cars. My guess is that's not just in China. You know, my guess is it's everywhere. So,
well, I mean, you would think that there are people in the world. I mean, I know I grew up a long time ago that would put two and two together. That if a kid down the block wasn't supposed to do this, you weren't supposed to do that because it was pretty similar. I mean,
agree.
I mean, if we're gonna bounce TikTok out of the country,
right?
At the same time, this guy's gonna give him information from here. Doesn't he get the connection?
Well, you would think, right? But
yeah.
It doesn't appears to go right over his head, right? And it's big enough. Tesla's big enough, and it's so. And listen, and I get it, and I get the whole thing about, you know, making progress and EV vehicles, all that stuff. I get all that. A, we're just not there yet, but B, you know, he needs to protect his brand, and so he sells out his soul to protect his brand. But the Tesla culters, you know, the ones that follow him, that react to every breath he takes, love the fact that they went and did it. Look what they did. Took the stock up 15%, 25 points yesterday alone. The stock's up 45% in 5 days. On you know, news that he's getting rid of people, that he's firing people, that he's, you know, which is all good, you know, kind of clean up shop. And now he gets in bed even deeper with China, and so it's a little bit distressing to me. But it is what it is, which is why I don't own Tesla. I never own Tesla. It's not a name that I would play in, and I don't own anything in China directly. I just refuse to do it because China will change the rules at any given moment. My exposure to China is through Apple. That's really my biggest exposure to China. And it's not even a direct investment in China, right? It's through Apple that has exposure to China.
They were up pretty strong yesterday, too, so there was a little bit of a tailwind there. I mean,
Apple, because Apple got an upgrade from S.C. Bernstein, which is very interesting that they upgraded the name just ahead of the earnings, which are coming out on Thursday, when there's all this concern that, you know, China sales are once again going to create a problem for Apple. I think that's overdone. I'm not in that camp. I don't think so. I own Apple. I like Apple. On a pullback, I bought more Apple. I'm not going to chase it if they run it up. But, you know, on the 17% pullback that we saw starting in, you know, from the highs that we saw last, March or February, we saw a 17.5% pullback. That was an opportunity for a long-term investor to buy it, right? It's now down. It's still down 9% on the year. which is where I think the opportunity is going to be this week, because, you know, Amazon's up 17%, Qualcomm's up 10%, AMD's up 15%, Apple, though, is not down 9%. So if you want my idea or my guess on where the opportunity is, I'm going with Apple. And Bernstein, yes, upgraded that ahead of the earnings, and so we'll see.
Well, Kenny, you've never wanted to be, obviously, anywhere near recently, somebody just pukes out his Apple. I just wonder, when you say long term, and again, we've talked about this for, now, you know, the mentality now is nothing can do wrong in any of these companies, and it really is, it's somewhat similar. And every time I say this, people must think I'm like this really bearish guy, but I'm not really. I'm just saying, right now you might want to be a little more careful than you did 5 years ago, because we're up so much higher. Is all I'm saying.
I'm not disagreeing with that. But listen, again, I'm not somebody who is just starting out and just getting.
Oh, right, I get it.
Apple for years, and so therefore, you know, my cost basis is well below where it's trading today, and so I'm okay with it, right?
All right. Well,
but if you're just starting out, then you're right. I think you have to be a little bit more cautious on how you start to allocate money into Apple at this point.
Well, my question is, and I hope you have a good answer here, because obviously, well, I got a lot of people involved in Apple too. But, you know, and obviously both of us were hanging around. We were deeply involved when 2000 came, and there were six companies that were never going to back off, and then five of them did. One of them did. Well, Microsoft even did for a decade. But, I mean, you and I, I mean, how the hell, what is the world going to look like in 15 years, and where does Apple fit? I don't know. I mean, they were talking about, they always seem to come up with something. They always seem to have good leadership. They got a whole ton of cash. Yet they have had revenue that hasn't grown in like a long time. You know, if that happens in another 5 years, I don't see them the king of the hill anymore there. I mean, maybe they are, but I don't know.
Well, listen, I hear you. I can't necessarily say where it's going to be in 15 years. I'm not even sure I'm going to be here in 15
years. Well, neither. Yeah, none of us are. Tomorrow is promised to nobody. But I guess I'm saying, when people say, and I'm with you, because I have a bunch of them. That's what I do for a living. We have a lot of long-term investors, and I say, okay, what do you think this company is going to look like 10 years from now? I mean, what do you think, NVIDIA, where everybody can't get out of the way, they're kissing the guy. Are they going to be the only horse in town 10 years from now? I've never seen that happen. I mean,
I don't think they're going to be the only horse in town 10 years from now, but I also don't think that they're necessarily going away, right?
I'm with you.
Billions of dollars on research and development. They just print cash. You know, $120 billion every 3 months is incredible to me. So do I think they're going away? I don't think they're going away. Are they going to be different? Sure, it's going to be different. Is it going to be better? I don't know. Listen, the New York Stock Exchange is a very different place today than it was, you know, 20 years ago, but it's still very vibrant. There's a lot that happens there in terms of market structure and trading and all that stuff, but it's not nearly the place it was when I was there at the height of the season in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s.
And that's, in my opinion, is a massive degradation of the system.
Well, okay, you and I could spend all day talking about that, because I am so in that camp with you. I think it's a disaster. Although, you know, people in the tech industry and all these quant traders will tell you that it's progress and it's wonderful and look at how great this is and blah blah. I would argue the opposite. And I would argue the opposite, that now we're trading in sub-decimals, which creates even more chaos, and 1,000 price points between $21 and $22. They want to go 6-decimal places and create even more chaos at 10,000 price points between $20.
Well, they want to steal the offer from or the bid from everybody. That's
correct.
I don't care where you put your price point, but if somebody has a different one than you, that's wrong.
Exactly. But anyway, so we could talk about that. That would take a whole nother. Another week in our whole 15 minutes about the degradation of the system. But one way or the other, going back to Apple, and while I think it's great, and I own Apple and I like Apple and all that stuff, I'm curious that S.C. Bernstein would have put the note out ahead of the earnings, where there's a lot of speculation around, is Apple going to disappoint? I don't think they're going to disappoint, but, you know, it all depends on, too, what the market hears versus what they say, right? I mean, I love it when they say they only made $118 billion when the estimate was for $118.3. Really? You're going to sell the stock up 5% because that's the headline? It's ridiculous to me.
Well, you run into, you saw Coke's earnings today, and they talk about revenue going forward, how they're raising prices. My view of the economy right now is that the I think we're reaching a point, like the Irish say, you know, on our, my Italian half and your side probably don't know this, you can't get blood out of a turnip. I see people's ability to keep giving their kids the $1,500 phones is dropping like a rock countrywide.
Well, I agree with you, but I agree with you. Although I think, you know, the phone that they have is fine. There's no reason necessarily to upgrade and replace it. But I'll tell you what, I get messages every day on my phone. Come into Verizon and turn in your phone. We're gonna pay it down. We're gonna give you this deal. They are trying desperately to convert people, right? However they do it. You know, we're offering the Verizon for sure, because that's my service. I don't know what everyone else is doing, but Verizon for sure is trying to make all kinds of deals. So I'll come in and turn in my, you know, my current phone for the latest version of the iPhone.
Yeah, I know they're trying every which way from side. Everybody thinks they're all going to grow, and yet if the rest of the 90% of the schlumps like us don't grow, there's only so much they can grow.
Correct. I hear you. But, you know, listen, it's amazing to me because, like, almost like Tesla, there is an Apple cult, right? People just, if something new comes out of Apple, and they have to be the first one to have it. They have to show everyone what it is. They go out and spend the money. And so it is amazing to me. And look, Apple has changed the world for sure. And my impression is they're going to continue to change the world. So at the moment, Apple is a core holding, will continue to be a core holding, and on pullbacks, I'd buy more Apple.
Well, yeah, and I think there's most people feel the same way you do, and so yeah. Do I. I just wonder, what's it going to take? I mean, we have people now that, even though the interest rates have gone up and up and up, and stocks should be valued a little bit differently on classical models, people are convinced the rates are going back down and we're going to the moon again, which we still are, by the way, sort of on the moon. I don't know, Kenny. What would it take Apple? You know, how many quarters in a row of stagnant revenue would it take for you to say, you know, I don't know about this? I mean, right now you're not there, obviously, because you think...
Right now I'm not there. Right. I am not there right now. And look, like
I'm not saying you should be, by the way. I'm just saying...
But like I always say, until that happens, until the fundamental story changes for me, whether it's Apple, whether it's JP Morgan, Bank of America, Verizon, whatever stocks I own, until the fundamental story changes from the reason I purchased it in the first place, I tend to ride the waves, right? If something changes dramatically, so to your point, if suddenly they start announcing quarter after quarter of, you know, declines, and then there's something clearly wrong, then that's going to cause me to, you know, reevaluate. But until I see that happen, I am not reacting to every, you know, headline that drives the algorithmic traders in Apple or JP Morgan.
Why do you think, Kenny, well, we're on this subject, because, I mean, obviously it's a big deal. It's the biggest holding in a lot of the places I do business with. Why do you think that the other, you know, essentially cell phones, which seemingly are every bit as good and just as innovative, why are they never talked about? There's more non-Apples out there than Apples, right?
I hear you. It is amazing to me, you know, Samsungs and all the other ones. I mean, that you hear Samsung, you know, back and forth, but not the way you hear Apple. It is true, and I'm not sure why that is.
I often joked, and I don't think this is true, but I often joked that the first thing they do when they get a new one out is give everybody on CNBC a new Apple. That's all they talk about.
They give it to Andy Sorkin that goes out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the first thing they did. It's like giving somebody, you know, if you want them to talk about Tesla all day, give everybody a new Tesla.
Yeah. Did you see what he did in Ray-Bans? You know, Ray-Ban came out with that Meta. You can buy the sunglasses now that has the built-in technology where you can take, using the sunglasses, you can take a picture, you can talk on your phone, you can ask Meta, you know, Meta, what's the temperature in New York today? It tells you what it is. It's all built into the thing. They're called Ray-Ban Metas or something. Anyway, Andrew Ross Sorkin got a pair, and that's all he did was praise Meta and how wonderful it is, and look at this, and look at these pictures you can take, and I can walk around the city and take videos, not even without anyone even knowing, which is, by the way, a little bit unnerving to me, right? But look, I guess anyone could do that with a phone anyway.
I got a quick Ray-Ban story for you. One of my good buddies, well, his lady ended up being his wife, was a good friend of mine too. They get married, and she went to work for Bausch & Lomb, which made Ray-Bans, right?
Yeah.
And so we're going skiing, so she sends me this new Ray-Ban, this gorgeous pair of sunglasses. They were like for skiing and stuff. But they changed color based on how much light was out there. So they would darken if the sun was bright, and then they would lighten up. The only problem is if you started skiing like in a cloudy day, and the sun came out, they would darken real quick. But if the sun went back in, they wouldn't lighten very quick. So you couldn't see when the sun. I'm like blind up there. These things were they were set up for like being on top of Mount Everest, and meanwhile it was snowing, and I couldn't see my hand in front of my face. It was not good. Yeah. Not good. They weren't perfected yet, so we say, Kenny. So when are you getting your new set, your new sunglasses?
My new sunglasses. I'm going to get them when I get home because I actually am very intrigued by it. It kind of runs against me because I'm not a Facebook person. I don't do Facebook, and I never owned Facebook. I didn't buy it, whatever. But it does sound interesting, so I want to go home and check them out.
Okay, we got about a minute. One quick question: if you were, I have some clients now, and some of them actually the middle-sized institutions are kind of interested in their portfolios composing of various ETFs. I always stay in the ones that are the most liquid, so there's only about 10 of my trade for my people. Make that 12. If you were going to do that, if you were going to set up for the next year, and I were to say, gee, here's, Joe's got, $500,000, $1 million, 30, whatever he is, an institution. If you're going to line up your indices or your ETFs, I do a lot of work in ETFs and protect ETFs for people. I'm not a big individual stock picker, but what ETFs would you? I mean, last year everybody wanted to be in oil, and it was a horrible year for oil. Now this year oil is doing better. If you're going to pick ones going forward, which sectors do you like?
So I like financials. I like industrials, right? So the XLI or the XLF for the S&P sectors. I also like basic materials, which are a kind of an underperformer so far this year, but I think that's where therein lies the opportunity, right? Communications is the leader, way out in front. So I'm not chasing communication names. And consumer staples, while boring, they're not sexy. But if we go where I think we're going, consumer staples will hold up and offer some shelter from the storm. So, those sectors, financials, basic materials, industrials, and consumer staples.
Kenny, in the material part, we have people in there. And it's been kind of an underperformer. And I think a lot of it has to do with all the lawsuits surrounding this 3M, because they're a big chunk of that. Now they're up today. I don't see what the news was. They're up $6. I don't think they had earnings. If there's some announcement,
Triple M earnings were coming out. I think they were coming out today. Triple M.
Okay.
I thought their earnings were due today.
But I think somehow this company's got they're down from 140 to 98. Something's got to improve there. I think for the materials section to go up.
Yeah, correct. And I think some of that could be the lawsuits, but I think that too will end up getting resolved, and then Triple M does have to start performing better in order for the overall index. I'd like to go in and see exactly what percentage Triple M is. It's probably 3 or 4% of the index.
Let's check that out. I'm gonna take the over on that.
Yeah, I can't check it out right now, but I will.
All right, buddy, you take care of yourself. We'll talk to you next week, if not sooner. SP Futures down 5, NASDAQ Futures down 22. Quick break, we'll have the Professor Hilsner.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now.
Money. Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howard. Ricardo on the board. SP Futures down 450. NASDAQ futures down 20. Do we have the professor?
Hey, good morning, Tom.
How are you, buddy?
Doing pretty good, yeah.
So,
what's up?
Nothing. Are you so? Are you?
I was gonna tell you. I was gonna tell you about the Ray-Bans things that you and Kenny are talking about. When we were in Thailand in the Navy, my buddy Wade, who's still like a brother to me. I don't know what it is about Navy friends or Navy buddies. They're like brothers. But he was all excited. We were in Thailand for a week. And he comes up to me and he goes, "Hal, look at these Ray-Bans I bought for $10. And I look at him and I go, dude, those are Roy Bonds.
Did you ever, did you guys ever make it through New York when you were in the Navy?
No, I was on the West Coast.
The, Ricardo's too young for this, but I imagine it's still there. But if you could, is there anything you couldn't buy in Canal Street in New York? It was every knack.
Oh, I'm sure. Earth. Yeah, the gray market is alive and well in New York City.
Yeah, because you could go there and they had all the what's the super duper purses? Was it the hell was the name of the real high end purses? They're still around.
I don't know. Versace. I have no clue. I have no idea. Gucci.
Was
I
it?
Don't know.
I thought it began with a C. I don't know, but they had whatever it was. They had all those there, and then they had. One of the guys on the board, a good friend of mine, he had nothing but money, right? So he had all these Mont Blanc pens, right? So he'd always bring them to the board meeting. You know, they got the pearl on the end and the whole bit. And so come on Cadell Street, and some guy was selling knockoff like Mont Blancs for $8 a piece or something. So I buy like three or four of my buddy Dr. J. We sit next to the guy at the board meeting. He puts down his Mont Blanc, and we put down our fakes right next to it and said, "Hey, you want another one? Ours look better than yours." But they had the fake Rolex watches, and they were like $20. And I said, "You know, this one doesn't look so hot." The guy says, "Well, if you run a really good one," he reaches under the thing. It looked exactly like a Rolex. He goes, "This is $75," and I go, "That's all right." But everything was available. There was nothing you couldn't get. You know, with somebody else's name on it, right there in the street. But anyway, And sunglasses were there too. Everything was. What's the Ray-Ban was one. What's the other really high end one? There's all kinds of. Really,
you know, I have no idea anymore about that stuff. I don't buy any of that stuff. I mean, if you look at me, I look like probably a homeless person.
Well, I remember buying one really really good pair of. I still have them. Varnays, the ski glasses.
Oh yeah, and Varnays. Yeah.
But I tell you what, you use those once for skiing, you never use anything again. I mean, they are that good. They cost a bunch back then. I mean, I still have them, but boy, you know, those are the ones. If you're going up, if it's a sunny day and you're going up way high on a ski slope, you're wearing Varnays. You know, or I think we might have other brands now, but anyway, if I ever skied again, I'd pull them out of the drawer. I still got them. But
man, I'll tell you, the last time I went skiing, I won a Nidecker board. It's a powder board.
Okay.
I won it in a raffle at Washington State University. I bought one $1 ticket. For the raffle, I was getting a Taco Bell for lunch. Bought one ticket. A month later, I get an email saying that I won. I'm like, I did? Well, probably the only time I ever won anything like that in my life. I took it out on a Western Washington ski slope that my brother Rod and I used to go to when we were kids. This is when I was in my 30s in my PhD program. And the whole thing was covered in ice because they had no snow, so they had to manufacture it. I couldn't get that thing to stop. I kept crashing into the. I was leaning on the edge, and I'm a pretty big guy. I couldn't get the thing to stop. I kept crashing into the skis where they, you know, storm so they can go in to have like a beverage. I could not. And that's the last time I did it. I walked home with about 100 bruises. It was brutal.
I can't imagine you being a knuckle dragger. Knuckle dragger is the name for a snowboarder.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Knuckle dragger is also a name for mechanic in the Navy.
Well, there you go.
Because we had to carry around those big wrenches to loosen bolts that are 4 inches in diameter, right?
God.
So the wrenches are so heavy that they pull our arms down to the ground, like in the Kurt Russell movie from his 20s, where he played the world's strongest man.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have a question for you regarding that before we get into topics that we're better at. We were talking, well, Carl and I were talking about it a little bit, but also with Lou regarding some of the, you know, these scenes we have seemingly issues all over the world now that the Navy is short, like a whole bunch of ships. You know, the ones that you see, you know, kind of sitting in storage or in mothballs or whatever, you know, the Oilers, the stuff like that, the ability to drop more shells on a ship in the water, you know, the supply, the stuff that nobody cares about, that's unsexy, you know, all the supply ships, the Oilers ships, all those kinds of things. Those things that have been sitting for 20, 30, 40 years, they're not officially scrapped, but they're like, what does it take to bring one of those things back online? I mean, I know it's a big, long question, because they're all different, probably, but...
Oh, man, just in the seawater alone, thins out the...
You got to get closer to the mic. You're fading on it.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Just sitting... Sorry, there I go. I was opening up the window. It's a little stuffy here in New York. Just sitting in the water alone. I mean, imagine a ship made out of metal, iron, right, for the most part, and you're just sitting in that seawater. Just sitting in the seawater alone thins out that hole, right? So, and then if you're running some systems on it, you're probably running seawater through condensers and whatnot. The corrosion is unbelievable on those ships. And then on our steam plant was, 30, 40 years old. And the metal thickness of the steam valves or the steam pipes that were like located near the pipe hangers, that's where corrosion happens. And the piping on those hangers thins. So, I mean, if it's just sitting there for 20 years and has been maintained, it would be a colossal rescue. Just a cloth. Because we were maintaining our plant every day. And I was in charge of the MSDS, the maintenance service log, or whatever it's called. I forget what the technical or the actual name is. We have all these acronyms in the Navy, and it's been 30 years. But the maintenance log on all the stuff that we had to repair, we'd repair 20 things in a day, and we'd have 40 things added to it. We could never get ahead of it. And that's with a maintain plant. So I can't even imagine what that looks like for a ship that hasn't been steamed in 20 years. It would be really expensive.
Well, I mean, better, quicker and better than a new ship, or no?
I think you might as well build a new ship, I would think, yeah. Build a nuclear power ship, you don't need any refueling.
Well, I mean, because we were talking about, you know, what happens when you have, you know, the idea has come up, because we've talked with Mike and Lou a lot. I mean, obviously, and you're our third military guy. You know, you're in the Red Sea, you're a gazillion miles from home, right? And all of a sudden, you know, 50 drones come at you, and you shoot, you know, 100 shells at them, or whatever you shoot, and you knock them all down. Well, okay, how do you get the 100 shells back to the ship in the Red Sea from here?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's this massive, I mean, you, like, being there, I have some idea of it, because I love reading stuff from, like, George Marshall and stuff, and how, you know, you win or lose wars by logistics, not necessarily by, you know, strategy.
It's all logistics. Yeah. It's all logistics. That's what happened to the Napoleon when he went into Russia, right? He had no way to feed his troops.
Yeah, I mean, so my question is, you know, Lou says that we've allowed that whole backbone, since we've got this idea that everything is going to be a quick strike, everything is going to be a war over in 30 days, or those kinds of things. We've let the other stuff slip. And what if we have to supply, you know, ships halfway around the world for a year or two for a bunch of shells to knock out drones? I mean, we've come away from that. Now my question is, we still these ships, we don't wreck them. They're all sitting there. How many hundred of them are sitting in Norfolk in the Navy Yard? Are they there just for looks to fly over, or could you actually get them going again? Are they maintained to any degree? Or I don't know.
The battleships that were in World War II, one was set up as a museum in Bremerton. I remember going aboard it, and they did a pretty good job of maintaining it. But I don't think they would be able to get it underway. I just don't. I mean, they had the living spaces and the navigation spaces looking really nice, but nobody was allowed to go in the engine room, I don't think. So.
Well, I mean, they have the New Jersey. Actually, the New Jersey's, yeah, I think, in dry dock because they're fixing the bottom, yeah, or just painting it. But when they brought those things out of mothballs, it was about a year. And then by the time they put air conditioning in them and all the other stuff that they didn't have, it was, you know, multi-million dollars to get those things going.
One thing about these old ships is they use old technology. I don't think that technology, I don't know if young people would be able to live
in the conditions that we lived in. And our conditions weren't too bad, but we had no Wi-Fi. We had glass TVs, you know, the old tubes with VCRs. The kids today need, you know, if they're going to join the Navy, they got to have their Wi-Fi, right? They got to have, you know, when I was in the Navy, I had to have 200 CDs taking up valuable locker space. Today, you just have everything on your laptop or your phone, right? You don't need any CDs. So, and email back then was, you know, you'd send out a telegram once every 2 months to your parents, right? Kids today would need to have probably pretty luxurious lifestyle on those ships relative to what we had. And I don't think they have to work the galley anymore either. When we reported a ship, we had to work the galley for, I don't know, 3 or 4 months when we first got there.
Well, somebody has to.
I think like the big aircraft carriers have contractors now.
Well, I mean, but I'm saying somebody has to.
Yeah. But I'm saying they have contractors now, civilians aboard the ship.
Well, you'd want one of those contracts.
Oh, that'd be nice, yeah.
we had a
but guy. Yeah, I mean, the supply ships supply more than just bullets and missiles. They supply the food. And when one of those supply ships pulls up next to your nuclear-powered cruiser, it's really impressive how they bring that food on board. It's crazy.
I mean, you're doing this on the water, right?
Yeah, you're doing it on the water, and dolphins are swimming around, and they're shooting ropes, right? Ropes to pull the cables across. It's quite the operation.
Well, how choppy can the water be to make when you can still do this?
Oh, you have to do it in pretty still water. And you know, our ship, for example, our cruiser, it was kind of a, I think it was kind of a flat bottom ship. And man, in the calmest of waters, it would sway from port to starboard about 5 feet. It would just sway back and forth in pretty calm water. And so you have to be in really calm water to do it.
Well, what kind of?
You have to find it.
What kind of cruiser was this thing? What kind of guns do you have on it?
We had like a 4-inch gun on it, and then we had the Phalanx that shot, I don't know, thousands of rounds.
Oh, so you were a cruiser that like wanted to protect. You want to protect the aircraft carriers? You were like a
we were an aircraft carrier group, and we were nuclear powered, so we didn't need any fuel, but we sure did need a lot of flour because they made the. That's one thing I remember about the Truxton. They made the best homemade bread. That's about the only thing I ate about 4 months into a long 6 month cruise was the bread. I mean, they made it in the morning fresh because you can't store bread on a ship, right? You have to make it every day. And man, it was so good. To this day, I love homemade bread. It was crazy.
My brother cooks it every week for Sunday.
Yeah.
But you were not a World War II cruiser, which essentially was a 12-inch guns that could go up against the battleship damn near.
We weren't that at all, huh? We were probably going to take out little gunboats.
So you were a big destroyer, but you had a failing because you were bigger.
Well, we were smaller than a destroyer.
Really?
We just had one 4-inch gun, I think, that shot 4-inch shells. Those things are pretty heavy too. We had to do the fire brigade thing where we had to pass the shells, you know, from one sailor to the next.
Oh, okay.
They're pretty big. I think I remember them being about, I don't know, a foot and a half to 2 feet long and about 4 inches in diameter. They're pretty heavy.
Oh, so they would do some damage.
Yeah, but I think mostly to like smaller vessels. So little things trying to get out of big carrier.
Is your ship taken apart or is it sitting somewhere saying they could use it again someday?
Oh, it was decommissioned when I got out of the Navy. It was decommissioned. It had been running for 20 years or 40 years or something. They recommissioned a ship used the name Tommy Truxton, right? There's a new Thomas Truxton.
Okay, so but you think it's cut apart or it's still sitting somewhere?
It's gutted. I mean, they definitely got the nuclear power plant, nuclear reactor, and all the components out of there. You might see the hole somewhere, sitting somewhere, but that thing's gutted. The nuclear reactor's probably in Idaho somewhere or New Mexico.
Well, that's what I was reading about. There was a question in this Quora regarding the Enterprise. And they said when they decommission a nuclear sub, they take the whole core and ship it to someplace, eastern Washington or eastern someplace, and they store them there. But the Enterprise has 8 of them, so they don't know how they're going to get them out of the thing.
Well, in the Navy, I was stationed as a student and then a staff instructor at the number 3 engine room in Idaho. Well, not Idaho Falls, Idaho, but that's where we said we were, you know, stationed at Idaho Falls, Idaho. But we were actually 80 miles west of Idaho Falls on the desert near Arco, Idaho. And we had the number three engine room out there, and we had this thing that simulated flight controls or flight ops. And you could actually see the hull of the ship. It was like a steak. You know how a steak is cut?
Yeah.
You could actually see the hull of the ship, and we had these shafts going through it. And we were the third of eight engine rooms, but there's only one out there, the number three engine room.
Wow.
I was out there for almost 4 years, I think. I got there as a student for 6 months, and then staff for 2 to 3 years. And then I went to the Truxton.
There you go. Hey, let's shift gears a little bit since you are our economist, and we try and, we have a couple, but I look at the Tesla situation yesterday where the stock was up a bunch because of the deal that evidently Musk cut with the Chinese. He's going to do all the stuff over there, but oh, by the way, they're going to get all the data from all these cars where they go. And Carl's concern was they're going to get the data of what people are doing here as well. Who knows? But
Hey, insurance companies are getting your data right now, right? You drive too closely behind a car in front of you. You drive too fast. You run a red light. All that data is being
I guarantee they're not getting it from my truck.
You're not getting it from my cars. I have old vehicles that I maintain myself.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. I look at the situation. Let's look off the Atlantic coast. I look at the situation in the Middle East and Russia and Ukraine, and I go, this is on a par with anything I've seen in my lifetime in terms of complexity, maybe worse. Then all of a sudden you turn the other way and you go, this is about as bad when you get people trying to do business with a place. People have massive investments in a country. The country looks like they're coming after you. They're actually building stuff designed to fight against you. I mean, whether that's their full intention or not, I don't think so, but who knows? I mean, I don't know what they think over there. And yet we're so in these, we're like a tick on a dog in these guys in terms of money. You don't hear anything about the investments and who's making or who's losing. It doesn't look like they're paying a whole lot of interest, although I don't really know. I mean, I don't know economically how you can put any kind of a investment, how you can look forward and say, what's this world going to look like 5 years from now, which is really the first thing you want to do when you start investing, right? I mean, if the world's going to be good, even a maybe a fairly crummy stock might give you a decent return. If it's the world's going to be horse bleep, well, then you got to sit there and go, you know, who do I want to invest in? That type of thing. And then you look at your, you know, a government that, you know, how that should enter in your investment decisions. It does, because right now, I mean, everybody thinks everybody's fat and happy with their investments. I see these guys as broke, and I don't care who becomes president. Nobody's coming across with a tax decrease, and I see one coming. How do you not have an increase of some kind, whether it's in capital gains or something, which all of a sudden that's going to cause a problem with the market. I mean, my look forward is kind of fuzzy here. You know, I see China is a total disaster, and the Middle East, you know, that could be, it seems to have toned down a little in the last couple of weeks, but I don't know. Hopefully that won't fire up. Hopefully they get a ceasefire out of these negotiations and everything starts to die down. But I don't know. How can you put a view on what you know 2027 is going to look like here?
You know, I share your concern, because can we really tax cut with the size of the amount of money that the government spends?
I think that whoever, they're almost going to have to repeal the Trump tax cut. I mean, I don't see how the hell you're going to have.
Well, I think they have to rethink taxes altogether. I think in this new world, digital world, I think you have to revision the tax code. You have to scrap what doesn't work. I don't think it works. I think the only thing you can do, and I've said this over and over and over on the show, is you have to just completely scrap what we got. I mean, it just is horrible. You know, the big boys can mine it for loopholes. The little guys are stuck paying most of the bills. So no matter how they repeal, how the Trump tax cuts are repealed, or no matter how the system is tweaked going forward, you know the big boys are going to be able to mine it for loopholes.
Well, that's
so they're not going to be paying taxes.
By the way, you're in the exact same camp is my younger brother, who, by the way, knows an awful lot more about taxes than I do. He's a CPA and so forth.
All I know about taxes is I don't like paying them.
Well, me too, but his point is the same as yours, and I to be honest with you, I vehemently disagree with, not vehemently, but I pretty much disagree with both of you.
Yeah.
For one reason. One is, you know, he thinks we got to scrap it because it's A, not working, people aren't, you know, people with a lot of dough aren't paying, that kind of thing. And my view is that'll take you a decade. And when you figure out the next system, be it a value added or wherever you want to go, you're going to find that unless you figure out a way...
I don't even want a value added. Okay, I don't want a sales tax. Yeah.
Okay, what I'm saying, whatever it is, if you don't figure out a way to spank the people that have a problem, that are causing you trouble, and they're just going to screw the next system just as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you could enforce the current system if you wanted to, right?
I think it's really hard to enforce the current system when, you know, the big boys...
I didn't say it was easy. Yeah. I'm saying... But when they got
smarter and more credentialed, brilliant people working on their taxes and defending their taxes in court, the only person you can come after are people who don't have those kinds of resources.
Okay, but
the big boys have the best talent when it comes without a doubt. Tax law and accountants.
But there are no one of the most amazing couple of classes I ever had in terms of crime and punishment. At the University of Chicago, and I can't remember the guy's name. Hell, maybe I should. If I ever clean my place up, I'll try and figure out what the guy's name was. We had a class in people I don't think do this anymore, but it was sort of an MBA, let's say an applications kind of class of the stuff that you learn in economics and in business. How would you apply
managerial economics?
It was sort of, I mean, how do you? We went 3-4 weeks. How do you judge hospitals? How can you figure out whether a hospital is good or bad? And I mean, and actually have, it was very similar to, if you went back to football recruiting 50 years ago, 55 years ago, you'd call some, you know, high school coach in Idaho, and I got this hell guy, he plays halfback, man, he's fast as hell. You know, he's really good. And I'd sit there, and then, Ricardo would call me from Southern Cal, I got this guy, he's a half. I had no way of deciding which was which. I'd get some films, but I could never really tell how fast the guys were that he was playing against. I mean, it was a sloppy system type of thing. And, you know, and a lot of it had to do with how good your connections are. Anyway, it's not what I want to talk about, but hospitals are the same way. Everybody knows a doctor. Their doctor's good. Everybody got good care at this place. So he tried to use regression analysis on specific things you could pick in hospitals. And one of them was how many people, I mean, stupid stuff like, how many people had gallbladders out that on a test the next day the gallbladder didn't need to come out? That kind of stuff, because it was pretty high percentage. Yeah. How many people got food poisoning from the cafeteria? How many people got infections after surgery? Things that you wouldn't even really
think. How many people walked through the hospital pushing a triplet stroller who forgot their shoes because they were so tired from burping and changing diapers?
Well,
that happened to me, by the way.
But the idea is, how do you get? And then actually, one of the guys I knew from Notre Dame came up with a system. Wait a minute, we're gonna have all these high school kids run the 40, so we'll at least know what their speed is. Whether this, you know, so he tried to put bullet points together, saying at least we have
metrics
of some kind. But then, when we spent another couple of weeks on designing compensation packages, I tell you what, Al, I don't know if I've ever done any harder than that. You all know where you want to go. You want the CEO to be there for the long-term growth of the firm, which if you do it properly, you can't fight unions for 40 years. You can do it for a year or two, but over a period of time, everybody's got to be involved. You can't fight the environment for 40 years. You can't fight the unions. You have to do it in such a way where this guy is incented to bring it all together, which is really hard to do, and it's really hard to do. But where I was going with the other stuff, he said compensation or crime and punishment. He said if you take away, well, now you can't do that in Chicago. If you take away murders and rapes and things like that, which, you know, at the time were a small percentage of crime, he said most crooks are rational. I mean, in terms of money, very simple. If you steal a case of beer from the 7-Eleven, and you got a 50% chance of getting caught, the penalty should be 2 cases of beer, because that way you sit there and go, it's a zero-sum game. Why should I even do it? When one of these days, in order for this to happen, I mean, and of course you have jail, you could do that too, but some firm who's been, you know, having all their income in Amsterdam, even though all their coffee shops are in London and some other place in here, but they say because they run the coffee beans on paper through Amsterdam and that's where all the profit is, or through Bermuda or some damn place, you have to say, you know what? This is so egregious. You've stolen $10 billion over the last 5 years. By the way, there's about a 1 in 100 chance of you getting caught. Your penalty is like $50 billion. And by the way, half of the people on the board will never be on a board again, and all your CEO, all your other people are going to jail. If you're serious about it, Hal, and I'm not a law and order guy, you know that.
I don't think members of Congress are serious about it.
They're not because those are the guys that are paying them. So
those guys are doing better than Warren Buffett picking stocks. How is that possible?
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, if we're serious about it, you know, but we've had, you know, in my lifetime, like a few wars. They've called them wars against whatever the 9/11 guys. We've had a couple of wars where we actually were fighting. Well, for God's sake. Stealing money from the government in wartime, it shouldn't be a national sport.
Yeah.
You know, and it is. I mean,
I think that's been the case for hundreds of years, right?
Well, but what I'm saying is it's now
there's
the point.
There's always been siphoned. There's always been people siphoning off the backside, right?
But now the big companies are, if a place like, and I'm just naming names, if a Microsoft or a Tesla or somebody, you know, pays a third of the tax they're supposed to, well, the part they're supposed to is probably equal to how many Hals and Chiefs, for God's sake? 10 million? Yeah. I mean, the numbers are getting so huge. And by the way, the reason why they're getting so huge is because everybody else is paying and they're not. If you were, I mean, this is the part that when everybody starts to cheat a little bit, I mean, a trading floor, it wasn't like people didn't want to try and cheat. But the idea was everybody else there was kind of watching you, because if you cheated, it was directly out of their pocket. So it actually became probably the most honest place I ever saw, because everybody was watching everybody. There was no idea that we were all perfect. Nobody thought that, for God's sake. But it was almost like the Constitution. Okay, we know we're all crooks. How do we design this so we can't be crooks going forward, basically? I mean, I'm not saying the trading floor people were crooks. They weren't, but I'm saying anytime you have a room. So the point is, if you do something to the detriment, where if one guy sneaks overseas, like Forest Labs, I think, was the first, and does some stuff where they took their patents and moved them to Bermuda, wherever the hell he did. If it gets to the point where if you're not cheating, you can't compete, that's when even our dummies in the Senate and the House got to say, okay, I know I'm getting money from these guys. It's one thing for somebody to cheat a little bit. You know, okay, everybody's going to try and do that. But if it gets to the point where if you're not cheating, you can't compete, that's when I think you have a problem. Where if we don't have a place overseas, all of a sudden some other firm goes up for auction, and the guys that are buying it are people from overseas. I mean, you know, you can't get there. You know, I don't think you can. And yet we're there.
Well, I think in today's world of people being siloed on the left and siloed on the right, if you're a politician and your media on the left treats you well, or you're a politician on the right and the media on the right treats you well, and you never allow yourself to be questioned by the media that opposes you, you can pretty much get away with you, whatever.
Oh,
you
want. We got to go to break here, bud. SP Futures now down 21. NASDAQ Futures down 97. The employment cost index just came out. I wonder if that was part of it. We'll give you these numbers. When we come back, we'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, Innovation in Human Resources. Licensed in Illinois and
Hello, Arizona. This is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do at PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JOCKS. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us stocksandjocks@live.com.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell, Ricardo on the board. SP futures down 22.75. Market did not like this. Employment cost index coming in at plus 1.2% versus an estimated 1. So I guess they're talking about a little cost push inflation with that. We'll see, you know, where this all comes from. But the market did not like it. Like I say, dropped the spoos a little bit, but it'll come back some. So it's not horrible. But it's, you know, it's visible, let's put it that way. And over in Europe, we've got the, let's talk a little bit about Coke earnings. Coke is now flat, down 15 cents. McDonald's is down 2.43, so the earnings didn't, they shook them up a little bit, but now back to not very much. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX, DAX down 63.3%, FTSE up 47.6%, CAC around down 12.2%. So mixed, but I'd say kind of even in over bonds. Up 5 basis points now. This has turned. We were the other way. 4.66. The Bund up 6 basis points, 2.59. Japan down 4 basis points, 0.88. We've got oil up 46 cents, creeping again, 83.09. Brent up 21 cents, 88.61. Natural gas up a penny, 2.05. Gold down 37 bucks, 1.6%, 23.20. Silver down 88 cents. That's a 3% move, 26.78. Copper up 6 cents, 4.59. I'm sorry, down 6 cents, 4.59. That's the first down move in copper in a while. Over in Asia, we have the Nikkei up 470, 1.2. They're up, basically following our lead yesterday. Hang Seng up 16. Almost all of that flat. Shanghai down 8.2%, so not much going on in mainland Asia at all. And we've got Bitcoin down 1,500, 61,241. Carter, what do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports? Beautiful day.
Top of the morning, Chief. You're right. It's a beautiful day. Very sunny. It's currently 7:36 out here in Chicago with 52 degrees right now and a high of 68. Mostly sunny, as you said, and pleasant. We got wind gusts going out to 4 miles per hour, and tonight will be partly cloudy and mild with a low of 60 degrees. Looking ahead at a pleasant Saturday as well. Very sunny. In Phoenix, we got 66 degrees right now with a high of 95. Very warm with plenty of sun as well. And tonight will be clear with a low of 67. On the traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, it's going to be 38 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 63 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 15 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 28 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 46 minutes. On the sports, I got the MLB for you. The White Sox lost to the Twins, 3-2 in Chicago. Cubs beat the Mets, 3-1 in New York. The Diamondbacks lost to the Dodgers, 8-4 in Arizona. And all these three matches are repeating today. The Cubs versus the Mets at 6:10 p.m. The Twins versus the White Sox at 6:40 p.m. And the Diamondbacks and Dodgers, 8:40 p.m. So you better make sure you stay tuned to that. That's all I got for you right now, man.
Hey, Al, I still recall somewhere in the depths of my old brain section, the 69 Cubs and Mets, and I still love it when the Mets lose. Just saying. Especially if the Cubs beat them.
I haven't followed baseball in a long time. What's going on with baseball?
Well, I mean,
who's good? Who's bad? I mean, I think I saw an Astros Rangers game about a month ago.
Astros are not. They started out a little slow. We could do the standings here, but Dodgers are still good. Obviously, the Cubs have a nice start.
Is the hitter batter whose translator was accused of stealing from him? Is he playing right now?
Oh, yeah, he's playing for the Dodgers. He's not pitching.
He's not pitching, though, right?
No, he's not pitching yet, but he's playing. Okay. He's DHing, and he's actually doing pretty well. Okay. He started out strong. I haven't looked at him lately. Yeah. He's obviously quite the talent.
Yeah. Well, I was following the guy from Baltimore that was drafted by Baltimore, number one. He was sent back to the AAA league, AAA team.
Okay, well.
The number one draft choice.
Well, sometimes they get overmatched, and they have to go down and work on some stuff, come back up. But you're seeing a lot of people going back and forth because there was some weather outs early in the year and some doubleheaders, so you see a lot of traffic going back. Plus the Cubs have nothing but injuries, so the I listened to one of my buddies, my attorney buddy, and he been playing. The guy was played. He played football. He boxed. He played softball. He played hardball. I mean, you name it. The guy played everything. And he goes, in all the years I played with all these on these really good teams and all these great athletes, I don't know of anybody who got an oblique strain. What the hell is that? What are these guys doing to themselves? Where everybody's got an oblique strain? He goes, is that something new?
Man, I dislocated my left toe. I dislocated my right or left thumb. And I don't remember ever. I could play 10 basketball games in a row in my 20s and not even get winded. 10 basketball games in a row. 5 hours straight, never get winded. And if I got hurt, like a dislocated left thumb or a dislocated left toe, I didn't even know that I was hurt until I was substituted out of the game. So I don't understand people taking games off. That's one thing about Jordan is so awesome. Jordan and guys like John Stockton, man, they played. They played every night whether they are hurt
You can play if you're hurt. You can't play if you're injured.
Yeah.
I mean, if you actually do wreck something, I mean, it's very possible for those guys. They're all landing on the ground. They're doing something. Stuff could happen.
With the money they have today, I mean, you got to take some time off, right? Because you want to milk as many years out of the league as possible, right, with the kind of salaries they have.
Well, why would you – with the NBA right now, and you look at the intensity of these playoff games.
Yeah.
I mean, do you really – I mean, that's why I could not understand. I mean, I'd love Tom Thibodeau as a coach. But the guy, he's got to get a brain cell working when it comes to you can't play somebody 40 minutes a game in November. Who cares? Nobody cares. I mean, the bleep doesn't start till April. I mean,
that just tells me that they play too many regular season games. They need to play maybe two games a week, shrink it down to about 40 games a season.
Yeah, but you're talking about
then the games. They're
sold out. Yeah, but they're sold out at $100, $150 a ticket. Who ain't gonna give that away?
Yeah, but I know, but you need to create a scarcity, and the games would be more highly valued if there are a few of them. There's just so many, and then the players take nights off.
Well, baseball, you can pull it off because 80% of the work done in every game is the pitcher, and you have a bunch of those guys. But hey,
you're giving them time off, right? Fourth game or third game?
Yeah, well,
rotate now. Yeah.
We get back a little bit to this. Where does this come from? Like, in investments when you do these kind of investments, you look at some of these companies and the bigger places. I mean, some of these drug companies. It looks to me like you don't even care if they ever develop anything. If they have enough money, they're just going to buy the places that are developing stuff. It appears. Now, do you want to invest in places kind of like that? Kenny just talked about he likes being in the bank index, XLF. And I'm probably way too honest on the show than I ought to be, but I have a real rough time valuing banks, especially these big banks, because they're so protected. They come out. I mean, how do you know whether Chase is a buy here or not, or J.P. Morgan? I mean, it's not. Most of the money is carved up by bonuses to people inside. You're not going to get it anyway, in my opinion. So I don't know what they're not like. They're really managing themselves to maximize your dividend. They're not doing that. They're giving you enough to pacify you, basically. They're on the inside. They're just going to give themselves bonuses, in my opinion. But I mean, how do you figure out whether these things are buys or not? I mean, Tesla ran up so much money yesterday because of his deal with the Chinese. How does anybody have any idea how much that deal is going to be worth to them? I mean, that's what I used to do for a living, is value this stuff. how the hell can I value in the next 10 years how many people would be driving around in China without a driver, without killing people, with no lawsuits maybe they don't have over there if you do kill somebody, and all of a sudden the government getting all this information. How do you value that? I have no idea. Do you?
Well, I mean, I think one of the keys would be, does Tesla have an exclusive agreement with China to be the only supplier of driverless cars? If so, then I could see that stock running up rapidly. But if they don't have an exclusive agreement, if they've just been, if China just said, oh, we're going to allow driverless cars, then I think it's a little irrational to put all that money into, you know.
Why would you believe the Chinese government and have to change their mind 3 years from now?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, it's a one-party rule, and we know how well that works in places like Wyoming and California where there's only one party.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, if they have an exclusive agreement, I can understand it, but if they don't have an exclusive agreement, because this is what we know about history. When a new technology is rolled out, it's expensive, only the rich can afford it, but 10, 15 years later, everybody's got it. Like, for example, Tesla... You know, they give you, you have to pay like $90, I think $99 a year or $99 a month. I think it's a month to have the hands-free driving option. Well, right now, maybe only rich people can afford that. But in 5 years, probably every car company is going to be offering it for free, right? So that's the beautiful thing about markets. And that's only if government lets markets work unencumbered, and instead of granting monopoly positions, exclusive rights to certain things, right? That's the only way it happens, if there's, you know, actual competition, instead of what we have now, where a lot of companies have these exclusive rights.
I've actually spent, you know, a couple of minutes. I didn't dig deep enough, or I'm sure I could find it. If Tesla didn't get all this money from other people for carbon credits, would they even be in business?
Yeah, I mean, I did a model in my Mercy economics class last fall where, if you remember, after the pandemic, there were these supply constraints.
Oh, yeah, there's all kinds of them.
Of, you know, electronic components. So for that time period, you know, the supply curve of Teslas was probably pretty inelastic, pretty vertical. And when you have inelastic supply, and a subsidy is either given to the car manufacturer directly or to the consumer, and all they can use that subsidy for is to purchase a specific product, all of that subsidy goes to the company.
Yeah, oh yeah.
100% of it goes to it, right? So all the car company does is raise the price by the amount of the subsidy. So I'm sure that had something to do with the fact that Elon Musk is one of the wealthiest.
How many millions of dollars a quarter were they getting from other car companies because of carbon credits?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, then on top of that, they probably have some kind of licensing agreement where electric vehicle manufacturers have to, you know, owners of electric vehicle manufacturers have to pay like a fee to access Tesla charging stations.
Oh yeah,
right?
Well,
I would think so.
That's going to happen, yeah. But. Now, when it's all over and it's 40 years from now and all these batteries are in some landfill somewhere, who the hell's going to pay for that?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that right there is an environmental disaster waiting to happen. Also, the mining of these rare earth metals. I mean, they're knocking down mountains in Africa. And yeah. I think that's what a lot of the war in Ukraine's about, the minerals, the natural gas, the crude oil.
There's a lot of rare stuff in Afghanistan too, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably why we had the war in Afghanistan, right? Because we were trying to secure those mineral rights, right? And the Chinese kind of sneak in and probably have gobbled those up.
Yeah, I don't think we're still doing too hot over there.
Yeah.
But yeah, but it is kind of bizarre. Market's never been easy. Also, it's not like, but you sit there, okay, I'm gonna act like I'm still in school. What's this company look like for the next 5 years? Is this something I want to put my investors' money in? And all of a sudden the thing catches fire and it's going up and everybody starts buying it, and all of a sudden they don't like it, it goes flying back down. You sit there and go, you know, the actual forecast of a place has always been, you know, in the designer's eye. You can never really price a stock just on that, but I don't think I've ever seen I didn't hear. You would think with Tesla up that much yesterday, now today it's down $6, but that somebody somewhere would come out and say, this deal is worth, you know, X per year starting next year, and that's why the stock's up. Nobody even tries to put a number on it. It just runs or goes down. All of a sudden it's going up. Somebody must know something more than me. It's trading up. It's this momentum trading. I don't think I've ever seen.
I think a lot of it is AI driven, right? I mean, the AI models are probably, you know, all the AI models are, you know, training on the same.
No, they've been around since long before AI.
Yeah. I mean, I know, but what I'm saying is, I think a lot of that is driven by AI.
Well, it's not. It's driven by there's bids and offers, and all of a sudden everybody starts buying. Everybody pulls their offers. It's running up, and all of a sudden you see a stock or an option that normally does X volume per day doing two or three times X. Everybody says somebody, the first guy must know something, and you pile on. And it's that simple.
I mean, if I was the biggest investor on the planet, and I had some friends that I had communications with off the record who are in a similar position, we'd probably buy a bunch of stuff, which would cause a run up in the price, and then we'd be the first ones to sell it.
Well, you got to catch critical mass though, or else you're just. Yeah. I mean, I'll give you a little bit of the history of this. We got a couple minutes. There were always guys. When there was an outfit called Track Data, and I had a Track Data machine forever, right, for a real long time until finally they went out of business. But they loved me. I actually did some research for them and stuff, so they didn't even charge me for like a decade because they still would call me to if something didn't match up, they'd ask me to help them out with, you know, not necessarily with the math, but with you know, somebody option pricing. And anyway, we became friends. But they had a machine where you could actually do searches and so forth. So you could sit there and you could do take like option volume of, pick a stock, option volume of Coke. And option volume is normally, let's say normally did, you know, I'm talking years ago, it might do 1,000 options a day. And all of a sudden, one day it's doing 3,000 options. Okay, so there was a big uptick in volume. It might be in a certain strike, it might be something. But you knew that it traded, but you didn't really know why or how, what the motivation was for the trade. It could have been a certain call where Coke is trading, it's 6180. It could be like the 63 calls. All of a sudden they're trading, you know, three times the normal volume or something. You sit there and go, well, everybody's bullish as hell, and you could pile in there and buy those calls, all right, thinking somebody knows something. But it could be a firm like PTI doing a trade for, you know, the big clients that we have. We could be us buying, you know, 100,000 shares of stock and selling calls in essentially a covered right situation. You know, so that would be 100 lot, right? Or, you know, 100,000 shares. So 1,000 of the calls could be us, and we could be selling them, not buying them, mm-hmm. Right? So my buddy John Najarian, Dr. J, he came up with an idea. We got to do better than this. We got to figure out if they're trading on the offer or trading on the bid, because if they're on the offer, it might mean somebody actually has an idea and he's willing to pay up for them. You know, if it trades on the bid, somebody really wants to sell them, that type of thing. So he put together a better horse, for lack of a better term, that actually would tell you if they trade on the offer or the bid, which give you some inkling, not 100%, some inkling into the motivation of the buyer or seller. Were they anxious to do it or not? It probably wasn't a spread, that kind of thing. So, matter of fact, this was pretty good. We're in 9/11, he was on TV saying, hey, all these people came out and bought puts in United and American and all this stuff like 2 and 3 days before this happened, so somebody knew what was going to happen. Sort of like this October 6th thing in Israel. There were big increase in put buys on the Israeli stock exchange in the week before that happened. So somebody knew what was going down. Yeah, somebody knew what was going down. So
yeah, that's kind of like what happened 9/11, right?
Well, that's what I'm saying. John was the one, and SEC's calling him up going, hey, how did you get this information? What are you talking? Well, so for years I was on that feed. Okay, so, but it is stunning, you know, how many times people just blow up. I mean, you'll sit there and you'll say, like in the VIX or in gold or something, if somebody, gold's trading, GLD is trading 213, all of a sudden somebody will buy like 50,000 of the, you know, 2050s in November or something. You know, those are Armageddon calls in case, you know, the country falls apart and there's a revolution instead of an election or something. I mean, you see people buy those things. They constantly, I mean, very rarely do they win.
You know, so unless you see kind of a progression, when I used it for, if you see a stock trading like a, you know, two or three times the normal amount of calls one day, and then the next day, then the next day, you'd start to get an idea that maybe there's something here, you know. But if you just chase the big order, I can't get over how much, you know, people would buy. I mean, where's the QQ? I'll use the spider. SPY is at 508. You know, you'll get somebody who'll come in and buy 20,000 of like the 450 puts in October. And you sit there and go, all right, well, the guy's got some huge portfolio someplace. And if all of a sudden everything goes to hell in a handbasket and we run down what would a 50% move, he's only going to lose, you know, 15%. Those are Armageddon puts. It's like insurance. I don't know what kind of insurance. So you see people doing that. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're bearish. It means that they're probably bullish because they own all the stock. They just want something in case it, some, you know, the black swan event. So you got to be careful when you just follow this momentum, you know, one way or the other. It takes.
If you were going to advise a data scientist to, you know, build a trading AI. I've thought about this a little bit, you know, teaching these analytics courses at Mercy. I would probably, tell me if I'm wrong, I'd probably built in like an acceleration in the price. Like if the price starts bending up and it's accelerating, like the rate of change is growing. And then I'd probably also include in it a volume, you know, trading volume.
Okay, but now you got to be careful with the first one there. Because yeah. The way the markets have, I'll use the term evolved or degraded, depending on what I call it, I'd say degraded. You don't have, like Kenny was talking earlier, you don't have a New York specialist book where people feel all that comfortable putting standing orders in the pit. In other words, if you came back to when I started in the 80s and you were to talk to the IBM specialist, now what advantage did the IBM specialist have? His advantage was he could see the order book. But say, I got IBM here at 66.90. Let's say 66 7/8, to go back to my parlance. Okay, well, There's going to be stock offered at 67. He's probably got more at 67 and a quarter. He might have a boatload at 68, should it ever trade there. But you have this ever-expanding orders that are in the pit that are there where people, if it gets there, they'll sell. But the flip side of it was, Hal, you didn't get taken with your drawers down. In other words, if you were offered at 60, and where did I say we were? 66 7/8. If you were offered at 67 1/2, and somebody came in to buy a boatload of IBM where the fill was going to be at 168, you'd get filled at 168. They didn't pick you off along the way. They'd say the trade's going to go down at 168, and everybody offered below that would actually get the number on the trade. There's none of that now. There's no like safe harbor. There's no gentleman's agreement. There's nothing like that. So nobody wants to be in with a standing order, unless, you know, I guess you would be if you bought the 60 options at a buck and now they're trading 6 1/4, you might say, all right, I'll put them in at 9. If I get it, I get it, type of thing. You're going to get some of that, but a lot of what you're talking about now, it's not AI, it's a market degradation. So what happens is if people start to buy IBM for some reason, other people just automatically pull their offers. So there's nothing there. So you'll see. That's why. Like a Tesla yesterday, that move was $20-some. I'm going to say 30 years ago, it might have been $15. You're still going to go to the upside. But now everybody just pulls everything along the way. I don't know why these people are buying, but I'm not getting away. I'm pulling it. So the AI, when you say AI, there's no like we were donkeys and now we're AI. This has been evolving the whole way. You know, I mean,
all AI is creating an algorithm that mimics human decision making.
Well, right? and that's why I'm saying these people spent fortunes, and they didn't call it AI a year ago. The minute somebody starts buying, they're pulling their offers. So whatever you want to call that.
If you come up with an algorithm, a set of steps, and you follow a set of steps to make investment decisions, and it's pretty successful, you can actually code that process into an algorithm, and you can call it an AI if you want. That's kind of how I look at it.
Right, right? But they call it what do they call it? Computerization of the market. Okay, that's AI to some extent, right? I mean, it's but just nobody thought
it's
of the term
like,
yet.
It's like my homework. I create these algorithms that generate a unique solution for every student, whether it's a statistical problem or an economic model, and then I have that algorithm give them instant feedback with instant grading.
Well, that's HI. That's HAL intelligence. Yeah.
Well, you got to be careful of HAL intelligence, because that HAL intelligence was killing all those astronauts on that mission to Jupiter. Remember?
Well, that's
that?
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, that's well, that just happens to be your name. They didn't name you after a computer, did they?
Well, I kind of joke. I joke with my parents that, you know, when I tell students why my parents named me HAL, I always tell my students that they named me after the HAL 9000 computer. But in reality, they named me after HAL Linden, the marginal actor from Barney Miller.
God. So, I mean, well, now we got the Spoozer still down 20, NASDAQ down 20.79. We didn't like this number. We don't like the fact that this inflation is hanging in here, but you know what?
Yeah.
It is, and it's getting worse.
In some yeah, in it's getting worse, and people, I think there's more people cutting back on luxury items. I think people are really struggling with trying to buy needs. And I think it's probably fine for people at the upper end of the income distribution, but for people in the bottom 50, I mean, for example, I tweeted a graph yesterday that showed we're missing, 9.8 million full-time jobs since before the pandemic. In other words, full-time jobs, the number of full-time jobs, according to the household survey, are 9.8 million below what it would have been had we been on the pre-pandemic trend. So we have 9.8 million missing full-time jobs.
Well, you know,
so,
hell, you weren't at on last week, and I don't know the spread. I always use trading terms. The spread between the Bureau of Labor, somebody came out and they said the median salary for somebody working 40 hours a week is up over 50 now. It's 53, 54, something like that. So you look at that number and you go, wow, you know, everything's going pretty good. Then you look at the median salary of everybody, and it's still below 40. It was over, it was like 32 in 2000, and now it's like 38. I mean, it's, you know, it's not, I mean, it's up 20%, but, you know, you're more of a math guy than me. When you're at some low level, you can say a guy's making $10 an hour, now he's making 13, he's up 30 cents, it's only $3, right? You still can't go close to where the McDonald's lunch is up, you know, $3 in the meantime. But the spread there between people that are working 40 hours and people that aren't, because Carl keeps noting, and obviously we have a big report this Friday, that the amount of people working 40 hours keeps dropping to where a couple of the labor reports, the average hourly earnings is up, yet the average paycheck is down, which is really, I don't know when that spread's ever been
work.
That. I don't know when that spread's ever been that big, between.
It's kind of like the adjunct faculty market, right? Before the Affordable Care Act, an adjunct would teach 8 classes a year for one university, but after the Affordable Care Act, they had to find 2, you know, courses at this university, 2 at that university, 2 at this university, and 2 at a fourth university, right? So I think the thing is, firms are trying to figure out how to convert employees to part-time employees. I think that's
we got a dash, but everybody wants to get away from paying this increasingly aggressive hospitalization stuff to a point where a lot of people aren't even getting care, I think. But anyway, thank you very much, buddy. SP Futures down 21, NASDAQ down 85. We'll talk at you next week. Have a good week with all your various spots. And why don't you go see the Cubs beat the Mets or something? Or at least the Mets lose. If I came out there, would you go to the game with me? I'd like to see the new stadium.
Oh, I would. Yeah, I would. Yeah.
There weren't very many people there last night. It was big whole open sections. But is that new stadium supposed to be nice, the Mets one, or no?
Well, I've been out to that area, and it's like a different world out there. It feels like you're in like Hong Kong or in Beijing. It's really a different world in that part of New York.
Can you take the subway out there, or do you got to drive?
Well, if you do, you probably have to go into Manhattan and then out, so it's probably 2 hours.
Oh, God. All right, bud.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll talk at you next week. It's ASP Futures down 22. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727.
DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
That's all, folks.